Hello everyone and welcome to Voxel Viewpoint, the podcast where the more followers you have, the more skills you unlock. We have a big episode today and we kick it off with some quick bits. Derek gives his impressions of the Astro's C40 controller for the PS4 and PC. We then finally get to the meat of the episode, our replay of Watch Dogs 2. Find out how this contemporary open-world action game holds up in our deep dive. It's April 9th, 2019, I'm Ryan Shepherd, and we're here to hack the planet. Hello everyone and welcome to Voxel Viewpoints. We got a big episode here today. With me I've got Lee and Derek. How is everyone doing?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Not too bad.
Pretty good.
Yeah, as I said, we got a lot to cover. We're going to start with some quickies right off the bat. Just want to do a quick Sekiro check-in. I started playing it, and I'm enjoying it quite a bit. I picked it up on PC, and haven't gotten too far. I got to one of the bosses that I feel like comes up in the discussion of this game, the guy with the spear, the shinobi hunter. And I banged my head against the wall, fighting him for a little bit, but I was able to eventually best him. Have you guys gone any farther into the depths of Sekiro?
I went back for a little bit, and then I had some people over that were pretty much saying, oh, it's not that hard. They wanted to see how hard it was. I let them sit down with it for a good, like, half an hour or so, and they were just like, yep, okay, it's hard.
It's definitely challenging. Lee, where did you make any more progress?
Well, we were talking about this just now, but I actually restarted it and got back basically to the place where I was, because the knowledge you have when you play it bears a kind of restart stuff it doesn't tell you when you start. So I pretty much got to where I was before and haven't really gone back to it. Not for the reason of it didn't warrant it, it's just other things have come up. We have to look for the other things for the cast and stuff. But sure. It's still setting up incredibly well compared to the others in the series, not in the series, whatever you want to call it. It's impressive. I'm enjoying it a great deal.
Yeah, it is. It's quite a bit different, while also still having that same vibe, I guess you'd call it. I had a hard time with that spear guy, and I don't know. I guess I haven't seen any of what I would consider a boss on the scale of Dark Souls yet. I don't know if this game has that or if they're generally just like tough human type characters. The first one was the that big fat samurai guy. I guess so far the bosses that I've encountered have been just trying to teach you things. Like that boss was specifically designed to teach you counters, the different kinds of counters, and to teach you to, as far as I know, to use the Shuriken shinobi tool. And then the second guy was there to teach you the thrust counter, the Mikiri counter, or whatever it's called. I haven't gone back since that guy kind of wore me out. So, but I've been playing a different game quite a bit. All right. So everyone's still positive on Sekiro?
Yeah. And like I had mentioned too, I want to come back to it when I have the time to sit there and focus mainly on that, because I feel the game deserves it. And I just want to, like, I'm probably going to restart like Lee did too, maybe get in a little bit more practice now that I know about more elements of the game, especially the Dragon Rot thing, because that could really screw you over if you don't pay too much attention to it.
That's the main reason why I restarted, definitely the main reason why I restarted.
Yeah, and the Dragon Rot's interesting. I felt like it kind of set you up to start to experience some of that, so you can probably learn the systems of it. I feel like, you know, they're obviously going to show you how to cure it, I imagine, at least once, and then probably after that you're kind of on your own.
They did mention too that resources to cure it are finite as well, so
right,
if you don't really learn the game and learn the systems, it could cripple you at some point.
Yeah.
Can you remember when to use it at the save points? Just choosing your moments.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I was just spamming it every time.
Yep. Right. All right. So moving on to the game that's been taking up most of my time, Satisfactory. I'm still playing that. I talked about it a few weeks ago. It's the factory simulator game that's in early access. And I was under a false assumption when I talked about it last time. I thought that every time you started a new game, you were thrown into a procedurally generated world. But that's actually not true. Come to find out, the world is actually permanently the way it is. And you choose the three starting locations, and those three starting locations are actually all part of one giant map. So basically, if you start in one of the locations and you know that there's a ore resource in a certain spot, every time you start on that particular map, that ore resource is going to be there. And that doesn't really affect the factory building too much, which is still great. It's one of those games that, there, even though it's in early access, there's definitely a lot of polish. They've definitely done a lot of play testing to make it just feel good to play. And so the controls don't get in your way, because it can be very frustrating with a game like this where you're trying to build these complicated conveyor belts and stuff like that. Everything just snaps in place very nicely. And they do things like, you know, there's terrain like rocks and cliffs and stuff, and a lot of the time the conveyor belts just completely ignore the things that get in the way, so you can like run a huge conveyor belt through a giant cliff and it doesn't even care. Just like, you know, usability stuff like that. But what I started realizing with, because the world is kind of permanent, I guess you could call it, they are able to put in secrets, like special areas in the game. Like once you go outside of your factory area, you can explore and you can find rare resources and stuff like that. But there's also like crashed spaceships that you can find. And if you have the right resource you can open up the cargo bay and get something special out of it. And there are like caves that you can go into and find something like resources that are even more rare. And I don't know what their plans are with that kind of stuff, but it is kind of cool to think that with any update they put out, they could add in another like handcrafted little cave or you know, a ship crash or something like that. It just got me thinking about like how it's, you know, could be so much more than just a simulation game. It could be like this exploration open world kind of thing too. So like it's hard to recommend on the factory building side of things, because though that's kind of hit or miss whether you're going to enjoy something like that. But on the, like, just sheer exploration and, getting out there and exploring the world, it may be a little bit more of an easier recommendation because there is, it's the world is gigantic. And because the controls and everything are so good, it also just plays really well as an exploration game. Like with the crafting and stuff, you can build bridges over gaps. You can build towers in order to get up onto something high, just like you just start throwing down items that you can stand on, and then you're up on the high mountain or something like that. So it's interesting how I picked this up kind of on the tail end of playing Astroneer, which is kind of a similar game in a lot of ways. And I think this is better than Astroneer in a lot of ways. It's more clear with the information it gives you on, like, the power you need to operate all of the buildings you have, which Astroneer really doesn't. It controls a lot better, because even in full release, Astroneer still kind of has wonky controls. And I just feel like it's broken up into these two main parts, where I can spend a long time building my factory, and then I can spend some time exploring. And when I come back from the exploration, I have like an inventory full of cool stuff that I can use to, you know, improve my factory. And with Astroneer, it just always seemed like the loop was go into a cave, fill up your inventory, and come out and do whatever you need to do. And it never felt like I never felt like I was accomplishing anything quickly, I guess would be the thing that I ended up feeling with Astroneer. I didn't feel like I was getting a whole lot done in the time that I was putting into it. So that's that. I've got a gigantic factory going, and I've slowly expanding it because you need lots and lots of resources. But I think I've got it under control.
Nice.
Yes.
So, I've just realized it's taking me two podcasts to realize the pun in the title.
Satisfactory?
Yes. I hate it even more now.
It's a really good name for a game.
Good lord.
It's really good.
It's terrible.
We're going to take a little detour. I'm going to split the conveyor belt, as it were, and talk a little bit about a Kickstarter Derek wants to give a shout out to.
Yes. A friend of mine that goes by the name of The Mad Poet has created a Kickstarter called Memento Mori. It is for Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition. It is a Victorian age gothic setting campaign where technology, steam power is on the rise, and magic is considered evil and outlawed. He has custom characters, custom mechanics for steamships, zeppelins, trains, science, witchcraft, different seductions into darkness. He's also come up with systems for guns and mechanical type weapons versus having magic. Since magic is outlawed, he'll still have like swords and stuff, but he's trying to get away from those real heavy fantasy feeling scenarios that are just common in Dungeons & Dragons. What it's all about.
So steam swords.
Yeah. We'll see what he can design, because he's like, I've got to see a bit and read behind the scenes and kind of listen to his ideas. And it's going to be really great, especially if you want to get away from like just the normal of what Pathfinder is, what Dungeons & Dragons is. This supplement he's trying to get kickstarted and printed on book is going to be fantastic. This guy has put years into creating the setting, testing ideas, and then going back and forth with everything. So it's really something I'd like to put out there. And, you know, we have fans out there because I post some D&D stuff from time to time. So I'm going to share it out to the group. You'll be able to find the information there, or you can search on Kickstarter, Memento Mori, or The Mad Poet, and you'll be able to find the campaign and read up more on it.
Okay, cool. So, what is he specifically kickstarting for? Like, what's his goal?
His end goal is he has different levels for getting it printed. The the basic kind of levels would get everybody PDFs and have it published. Okay. The little bit higher ones, you'll get discounts if you go to buy like a hardcover version of the book. For around it's a $40 pledge, which gets you the hardcover at printing cost, plus you get the PDFs of it. But if you pledge higher and go for $75 or so, you'll get a hardcover copy of the book signed with a custom letter written from him to you. So it just kind of depends how big you are into this. You know, is it something you'd like to have a supplement of and just grab the PDFs and do the entry level $20, $25 pledge? But then if you want to go all out, you like collecting these different things or the stuff that you'll only find in these certain spots, and you could go higher and get the actual hardcover signed book.
Okay, cool. And what was that again? How can people find it?
On Kickstarter, you can search The Mad Poet or Memento Mori, and it'll be the first one that pops up.
Okay, cool. While I got you warmed up, Derek, why don't you talk a little bit about the new Astro controller you picked up recently?
All right, so I've actually had more time to mess around with this because I did do the unboxing of it and talked about it a little bit. But at that, I only got to use it for 30 minutes before I started actually talking about it. It's a very nice controller. It's nice and solid, comparable to the Xbox Elite controller, but it's not as heavy.
Okay.
The Xbox Elite controller is kind of a brick.
What's the name of it?
It is the Astro C40 Tournament Ready PlayStation. Yeah, okay. Tournament Ready PlayStation controller. The one thing that this controller does that you really don't find in the other ones is you can actually swap your modules. So your D-pad and left analog stick, you can flip and flop, whether you like it how PlayStation has it set up, or you like the offset, how Xbox does it. But this is allowing you to use it on your PlayStation if you like that setup, or on PC, because it can be used on both.
Right, okay. Yeah, that was what originally caught my eye, was the ability to switch between the PlayStation layout and the Xbox layout. Does it feel... when you have it in a PlayStation layout, does it feel like a DualShock? Is the placement good?
Yeah, the placement's good. It's maybe a little bit better than a DualShock because the controller, I believe, is a little bit wider. So it's still if you've used an Xbox controller, you still kind of got that, it fits real nice in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
But the placement's great on that as well. And then if you switch, if you switch it out too, then you've got that real... Xbox feel, if you like that.
Right. Okay. And how is it all easy to interchange and change, move things around?
Yeah, so what it has is a faceplate with four screws, and it gives you a little tool. You unscrew the screws, it pops up, and then the modules just pop out, and then you just click them back into place, which I found is there's also a little red marking that you line up, and that's how you know you've got it back in the right spot.
Okay, cool. And it's wireless, right?
You can use it wireless or wired. It comes with a little USB adapter that you can use if you want it wireless, or it comes with a cable if you want to use it wired.
Okay, so you need the USB adapter even with the PlayStation?
Yes.
Okay, so it doesn't connect with Bluetooth?
No. Okay. That's probably the one downfall of it, that even though it's licensed by PlayStation, they don't have that, PlayStation connection that the DualShocks have.
Right. Okay. It's not common to get a, third-party PlayStation controller that connects wirelessly. usually they're all wired, and does it allow for like chat and everything like that?
Yeah, it has the same little 3.5 millimeter jack on the bottom, so if you're just using a regular headset that plugs into your controller, you still have that functionality there as well. Okay. It also has the touch controls at the top, and that thing's pretty responsive. It works well.
Does it open your map real good?
Yep. Yeah. Get those maps right on open.
All right, cool. Now, how much did that go for?
This was 200 for this.
Okay.
How much?
200.
Sorry. What else does it do?
Just a really great controller.
Does it make you breakfast in the morning?
I wish. That'd be amazing.
It's going to fuck you the night before.
Transform into a coffee maker.
Yeah, good lord.
No, it's just got it's got a really nice build. It's also made out of more of a matted material, so it doesn't slide out. It's not completely like slick feeling, so you can hold it pretty well. It's also, there's two extra buttons on the bottom too, little toggles there that you can program to whatever you want them.
Okay, so it's got like paddles underneath it. Are they paddles or are they actual buttons?
It's kind of like it's an actual button that's built into it. Okay. It's like where the paddles would be. Okay. They work pretty well. I use them for crouching and jumping mainly.
Do you find yourself like accidentally hitting them, or are they in a good spot where you don't think that that's going to be an issue?
They're in a pretty good spot. Every now and then, depending like what I'm playing, I might tap it. Depends like how my hand's resting, or like if I set it down on my leg sometimes, like while I'm waiting for somebody, I'll forget and I'll start like firing off if that's what it's set to, depending on the game, because I kind of usually try to have it set for crouch and jump because that helps a lot.
Okay. Yeah, not taking your fingers off the analog sticks for jumping can be very valuable, I imagine.
Yeah, it's I use the Xbox Elite controller a lot before on PC when playing Rainbow Six Siege. Mm-hmm. It was super helpful in there, and actually I had it set up weird to where we had just the two right toggles on, since you could set four on that one. Okay. And then I'd have that for like drop shotting and then just jumping.
Cool. Ooh. I know you've used it on the PlayStation. Have you used it on the PC at all?
Not yet. I want to. I'm gonna test it with some Anthem, because the other thing that had me interesting for that is when you're using it on the PC, you can completely customize it. Like, you can custom fine-tune the sensitivity of each individual analog stick, and it's got, like, a whole slew of stuff you can do in the Astro Command Center for it.
Cool. I don't suppose you can... So you would need the USB dongle to connect wirelessly to your PC, too, right?
Yes.
And it only... I imagine it only comes with one?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess you'd have to swap it out if you were switching back and forth.
Yeah, depending how you're going to use it. Like, right now on the PlayStation, I use it wired.
Okay.
So I'll probably just... I got the dongle sitting right here, so I can just, whenever I go to use it on a computer, just kind of plug it in there. I do want to test the wireless on the PlayStation as well, just for my setup. I use a splitter in the back, because my front two USB ports stop working.
Who doesn't use a splitter in the back, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, God. Yeah, so my availability of ports on the PlayStation is kind of limited.
Okay. Let me think. There was something else that... Oh, you said you were using a different third-party controller before you got this one, and there was a big difference?
Oh, yes. I also was using the Razer Raiju. Which is a wired PlayStation tournament controller. That one was about $150 to compare in like price range. The controller was great. It just on certain games I would notice like the input lag. Like in Sekiro, I had a real hard time like jumping and hitting like square wouldn't work. So I couldn't grab on the ledges right away. Or when I was trying to counter, I could hold the button to counter, but when I try to like quick hit it again, it wouldn't match. So I just get destroyed. Which was kind of weird too, because I'd given that controller to my brother to try out, and he's had no issues with the games he's playing with it. But I've also plugged the Astro, like I said, I use the Astro one as wired as well, and that doesn't seem to have that issue.
That's weird. Sekiro is not a game you want to have input issues with.
Yeah, not at all.
Yeah. All right. Oh, just a quick thing with Sekiro. I got it on PC, and it performs really well. I just wanted to put that out there, because we talked about the performance of the console versions in the last cast, and the PC version definitely performs really well. A lot better than some of the previous From Software games have out of the gate anyway.
That's good to know too, because there's actually been like a lot of PC games that's been having like out of the box performance issues. So
yeah, sometimes it happens. It used to happen a lot more. The PC versions used to be the lowest on the totem pole, but it seems like a lot of publishers have come around on that, which is good. All right, so that is the Astro C40. So now we're going to move on to the big topic of the night, Watch Dogs 2, a replay of Watch Dogs 2. When it originally came out, we all got distracted by other things, and we didn't really give this game its due diligence. And we've all spent a couple weeks diving back in, checking it out, and we've come away with a fresh perspective on this, at least in our case, overlooked gem, I think I would call it, because I think it's pretty good. I think that what the general feeling is, that this game is pretty decent.
Yeah, it's a very solid game. Very solid game. It's kind of a far more solid than you would expect if you played and, like most people, was a little underwhelmed by the original. It's quite a nice surprise, I think. It's a nice surprise to dip into. It's like, oh, this is actually kind of quite light, and it's quite a light game in a weird way. Quite a light fun game. It's not like kind of a grim GTA-style game, I don't think.
Yeah, so... that kind of brings us into our setting, which is kind of like, I guess I would say, modern day San Francisco and Silicon Valley area. And that's what the story and the characters and their motivations revolves around, a lot of like technology and the way that it intertwines with people's everyday lives and stuff like that. There was a little bit that there was definitely that in the first one, from what little I remember about it, but it really wasn't about, let's say, the culture around technology. Is that a pretty accurate assessment?
That'd be a good way to put it, because the first one was more like a solo perspective story. You were this one person and you were trying to figure out your problems, but everything was revolved around you. To where in Watch Dogs 2, we're the group, where everything is each of these different members, and you're still playing as one solo guy, but you're interacting as a group of a whole, not just his story.
Yeah, first one was very much a surface of that sort of counterculture, whereas this dips right into it, and you see lots of kind of the hacker counterculture sort of thing. You see a lot more than you did in the first one, like I say, where you're kind of a rogue on your own. You don't really dip into that,
right?
That world, I don't think. You're inflicting that world on others.
Yeah, the first one took place in Chicago.
Yeah.
Okay. But not exactly the hotbed of technological advancement.
No.
A lot more going on. A lot more going on out in Silicon Valley in terms of that. Mm. And, you know, that's represented in just pretty much every facet of this game, from the not just the main characters, but the villains and the secondary characters, as well as like all the organizations in and around the city, and the citizens too, the random people that you're just walking around bumping into and stuff like that. It feels there's a lot of character in just the setting in this game that I think is really well done. I've never been to San Francisco, but you know, I've seen and I've heard about like what the overall vibe is there, and you know, Ubisoft tends to do their homework pretty well when they set it in an actual specific location. And it, I feel like that they did a pretty good job here.
Don't you actually get to go to the Ubisoft offices in the Valley?
No, I heard about that. I heard about that when the game originally came out, but I have not checked that out.
Oh, it's an incredibly obnoxious level. You'll love it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're talking about their new blockbuster game that they're going to be bringing out, and how he's going to change everything at the end. It's a little bit on the nose.
Oh, okay.
But you get to leak it though, and it like breaks the internet when you leak the trailer. And it's like, oh, does it? Does it really?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
You carry on, newbie.
Yeah. Just like every time Ubisoft announces something, the whole internet breaks down. Although maybe it would if, you know, they were able to announce something without it leaking first.
Oh my god, it's so meta.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, the setting feels a lot more alive, and of course you have, just like in the first game, you have the ability to manipulate a whole bunch of stuff within it, so even that feel that adds even another layer of character onto that. But before we move on to the actual gameplay and the way you're interacting, I want to talk a little bit about the characters, because I think that's another area where this game not only like improves certainly upon its predecessor, but also kind of stands out in its own way in a in the, you know, like Grand Theft Auto modern open world kind of setting, where the characters, so you play as Marcus Holloway, who's a member of a hacking group called DedSec, and the other three members feel like genuine characters. Like when you first start out, you feel like oh great, they're just hitting the stereotypical hacker. There's Josh, he's like the loner and the basement dweller kind of programmer guy, and then there's Kirsten, there's Wrench, who's, you've probably seen in the promo trailers and stuff like that, he's the one with the mask that his eyes change based on his mood, and then there's Sitara, the girl, and you think that they would just fall into these, like where Grand Theft Auto would go with something like this, where everybody would just kind of be like a hollow character, like ripped from some pop culture reference point, but they feel they're fleshed out a lot more. Even Wrench with his mask, he feels more like a character than most of even the primary characters in something like a Grand Theft Auto feels like. You know, they kind of went that way with Grand Theft Auto 4 with Nico. Even remember. But they kind of, I feel like they kind of went more stereotype with Grand Theft Auto 5. Like none of the characters really had any unique, they just felt like characters. They didn't feel like people, in my opinion, anyway. But they do a better job here, kind of exploring these characters and making them feel, at least seem a little bit more interesting, in my opinion anyway.
Mm. I feel right. like they set them up like they would normally set. I don't want to be rude, but they kind of do come across quite kind of these kind of counterculture hipstery type people. They're normally the sort of characters you would see set up in a level or a mission in a Grand Theft Auto that you would eventually screw over and never see again.
Right.
But they yeah. kind of, it starts off like that, and they start kind of, you play it and you think, oh God, it's going to be this, isn't it? I'm going to hate these characters. But they do eventually start to flesh them out a lot more. Right. So it kind of subverts that thing. At first, I really didn't like them. I'm like, oh, they're doing that thing. Oh yeah. God, no. Not yeah, for a whole game, but.
I think that was a lot of my issue when I first played the game too, was I didn't really connect with the characters right away. And Marcus, yeah. well, he's definitely more of a character than some games in this genre or whatever you want to call it. He doesn't have quite as much personality as the other three characters. I think that's a lot because... a lot of his personality actually comes through in the way you play Marcus.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that.
And yeah, I haven't completed the game, so I don't know if there's a lot of other characters that show up along the way. But even a lot of the secondary characters that you do meet for a couple of missions here or there, they feel at least somewhat genuine. Like there's a little bit more than just okay, we need this person to show up for this mission, and then you know, don't write too much there because they're just going to be there for that one moment or something like that. Is there anything else with the characters that you guys want to bring up?
I just point out, the way they developed the characters, like, through doing the missions with them, I think it was a really good way to actually make you feel more for the characters instead of just having, like, dialogue with them there, them sending you out, like, you're going out with them to do missions or for certain reasons. You feel more attached because that's how they're built. Is through these missions versus just being there having a conversation whenever you return back to the hacker space.
Like they're there, sometimes they're there with you on the mission, or you at least meet them there, and then they give you some sort of information dump. They aren't just like cutscenes, you know, cutscene characters. So in relation to the first game, really you only had the main guy there, which I don't even remember his name.
I think it was Aiden Pierce, I believe.
Yeah. So, I know that game, specifically the Aiden Pierce, received a lot of criticism for his kind of dull persona.
Yeah, he's not much of a character.
Yeah,
at all, really. His character is basically his forward motion. You know, his kind of his quest for whatever he's going. I can't even remember what he was ultimately going for. It was kind of dull, but that's really all his character is: his determination to go and fuck everybody up with a big gun, I guess. Wasn't much to him at all compared to this one.
Yeah, it feels like... go ahead.
The first one was more like he was set up and I think somebody was kidnapped. And that's what drove him, was trying to get these people back and keep them safe. Mm-hmm. So it was just completely based around him, to where now that they've opened up to like the entire group, it really changes the dynamic of what the game could be.
Yeah. And it feels like... in that first game, you know, the setup was seemed like very like Hollywood action movie kind of setup, like revenge tale or something.
Yeah.
And the technology, like the hacking and the integration of the technology almost seemed kind of secondary. Like it was this revenge tale, but also he can hack all of this cool shit. Whereas here the whole story and you know, everything that revolves around the story has to do with the way the technology interacts with the world. Like you're going after home security companies and like a cult that uses technology and mass media to influence their followers and stuff like that. And it's like it all, and of course you're the hacker group that's using the technology and the way you connect with it to and like interfere with all of this kind of stuff and use it to your advantage.
Yeah. And not only interfere, like you're also trying to like gain followers to spread the awareness of, hey, you have these phones, you have this stuff.
Yeah, that's like the XP.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gain, it's not called experience, it's called followers.
Yeah.
Just like Forza Horizon.
So, I will say, though, that I do think the thing between the first one and the second one that I find a little bit kind of disjointed is there doesn't feel like very many stakes in the second one. It feels quite light and breezy and jazzy, kind of just pop through. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like much threat within the levels, the stages you're doing or the missions you're doing. You're in and out and you're having a good old laugh about it once you've done it.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like there's any kind of real impact kind of to propel you forward.
Yeah, that's true. There doesn't seem to be an overarching story. It just seems to be you're kind of floating between this thing and that thing. And, you know, like I completed the cult quest line, but then there was just another quest line to start up again. Yeah. And maybe it shows itself later on, but there doesn't seem to be like a through line with all of this stuff. At least there isn't
at the moment. It's just hack the world, isn't it, at the moment?
Right. Kind of. Yeah, so that, yeah, that hasn't revealed itself, and I've played quite a bit, so if it's there, it's taking its time to popping up.
I guess that
is something strange. It just feels like at this point a bunch of unconnected missions that you're doing in the world.
It lacks a solid antagonist, I think, maybe so far.
Yeah.
And if it is going to bring in, it may have done it a little bit too late. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. There isn't like a big bad that you're going after. So I talked a little bit about it with Marcus and how his character isn't quite as like, you don't really dive into his character too much with like backstory or motivations and stuff like that. Unlike the other characters, you do a little bit more. And I feel like his character, you almost can choose the type of character he is. Not that it really impacts the story too much or anything like that, but one big thing that separates this game from other games in this field, in my opinion, is your choice between going either lethal or non-lethal with the missions.
Yeah.
So you have like this array of tools at your disposal. You can just go in with your pistol or machine gun and shoot all the guards and accomplish your tasks like you would in like a Grand Theft Auto or any other game like this. Or you can choose to use like your taser, your stun gun, you have like drones that you can use to kind of accomplish a lot of the missions without even actually yourself going into the area. And, you know, you can hack cameras and different things around the environment to trigger, like, you know, you trigger a little electrical box to make a noise, and that attracts a guard over to it. And then you can trigger it to perform a non-lethal shock, and that'll knock the guard out for a little while. And that actually, it was cool when I first started getting into it. Like, you get to a mission zone, and you basically, almost all of the missions so far that I've done, story missions, have been get into this building, don't be seen, and hack a computer. Like, either you're downloading information or you're uploading a virus or something like that. And there hasn't been a whole lot of variation in that. I don't know if you guys have experienced that. There have been a couple of things where, like, I stole a Hollywood movie car or something like that. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, and that,
that mission was a lot of fun. I remember that
was pretty cool. The car was like talking. It was like, was it Kit from Knight Rider?
Yeah.
It's just like that. And that was like a diversion, but almost all of the other ones have been like kind of samey. The missions have been kind of similar to the ones before it. And once you go through the motions, you kind of know what you're getting into. Did you guys notice that? Is there something I'm missing?
Yeah, I could see that, where they're kind of all structured the same, and every now and then you'll get something different. Like, I had another mission later on to where you had to do some stuff in a car. Okay. And then it just ended spectacular. I won't really try to ruin it for anybody if you're not that far. Because when I jumped back in, I was already like 14% done the game. So I think I had just finished a church previously playing, and I just jumped right back into my save.
And continued on. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Like I said, there was a few things that popped up, but so many, at least with the church thing, it was a lot of that. And it was a lot of sneaking in, hacking something, and then sneaking out. And it was cool because you're not going in like a traditional stealth game, you know, with a silent pistol or something and shooting all these people and hiding bodies. You're kind of encouraged to survey the area, like hack the cameras and see where everyone is, and then plan your route through the environment to get to where you need to hack, do your business, and get out. And I think for the most part it works pretty well as a game like that. There's definitely some weird things with the AI, especially when you start making noise and they start following you. It's really easy to funnel them all down a corridor and just keep shooting them with your taser over and over and over again. Then you just have this huge pile of sleeping corpses. Because then they all wake up at the same time, which is funny too. But it's fun enough because you do have options. Like, you can use your little motorized drone if you want to, instead of going in yourself. Sometimes it's easier. Sometimes it's easier to go in yourself. Sometimes it's easier to use the drone, the little buggy. I haven't unlocked the flying drone yet. Oh, you know what? I did just unlock the flying drone. I haven't been able to use it yet, though.
Pretty fun, though.
Yeah, it's fun. It takes a little bit to get used to, but it's a lot of fun to use.
More so when you start to, like, when you first get it, it's kind of average, but once you start getting up that skill tree, it starts to get a lot more interesting. At first, it's not that interesting, but yeah, when you start getting the tag element to it and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was the thing that I was looking forward to, was tagging enemies so I didn't have to keep activating your cyberspace vision or whatever the hell it's called.
Your ping.
Yeah. Your blue vision. Yeah, so a little bit about the upgrade. So like we said earlier, you gain followers is basically the XP, and every time you level up, you get a bunch of upgrade points, and you can spend them on this tree, this upgrade tree that at first looks deceptively bigger than it probably is. There's a lot of samey things along the tree, but it's more like, you know, you're unlocking. There's one tree that's all you do. All you're doing is unlocking more charge on your what do they call it? The botnet thing, which is your meter for the amount of things you can interact with, things you can hack in the world.
Which to me never seems to go down.
Yeah,
so I don't put the money into it.
I've never. Maybe I should be using it more, but I've never ran into an issue where I was out. Like I wanted to do something and I was out of juice.
Some later missions that'll happen.
Oh, okay.
I had a couple where there's just so many people there to deal with, and where you were positioned. You really kind of had like pick and choose. I actually think I redid the mission like 3 or 4 times before I actually got down to what I had to do.
Yeah, because you can use it in the middle of combat too. You can kind of like distract enemies with it and activate like a thing on the wall that maybe you'll shoot out hot steam or electricity or something, and maybe it'll be in a good position to take out some guys. But I find anyway that sometimes you're just so much is going on, I'm not even paying attention to that kind of stuff. I'm more focused on, is this guy going to come around behind me and shoot me in the back? Or rather than, maybe I can hack that camera and get a different angle on these guys or something like that.
Yeah.
The upgrades are pretty cool. Like there are some where, you know, they unlock your ability to control different things. So like I recently unlocked the ability to control like scissor lifts. So now if there's something up high that I wasn't able to get to before, and there's one of these scissor lift crane things nearby, I can pilot that over, use it to get up, and that can even open up a new way for me to get into a restricted area or something like that. So there's really a lot of options that you can use to engage with the world, and they're really cool. So like I said, just I feel like sometimes the AI isn't really equipped to deal with some of the ways that you can interact with it.
No.
No,
I would say so.
Yeah,
it's a strange thing. The AI does strange things anyway. Like, so you play completely non-lethal.
Yes.
I'd like to do a bit of both. It feels a bit kind of mean to do it in this sort of game, because they don't feel like those sort of characters that want to go around massacring people.
Right.
So you kind of, if you want to role play it, you do want to go in stealthy. But when you so if you like taser somebody, it would take quite a while for them to find that tasered body, as it were. If you were to silent shoot them, they seem to be aware from floors down that somebody's died a lot quicker. Very strange.
Yeah,
They seem to be a little bit more wary. They haven't heard the shot, they haven't seen the shot, but suddenly from 2 floors down, like, huh? That you don't get if you don't get if you're just stunning them or knocking them out with your is it a yo-yo or something like that? You're
not a
ball, isn't it? Or in a sock or something.
It's like a billiard ball.
Yeah,
billiard ball string.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you can do the same thing 2 different ways, and people being notified. I don't know, it's very strange. There's no way they could tell the difference of whether somebody was dead or why they pay more attention.
Well, I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where somebody has died 3 floors below you, but you get this feeling. It's a sense that everybody has.
Yeah, I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think you might be reaching somewhat.
It's the sixth sense. You don't realize it, but that was the first upgrade they chose when they got their first 1,000 followers on Twitter.
I see dead people four floors away.
Yeah. That's a different movie. So, yeah, I haven't really checked out the lethal options too much, except I wish they wouldn't put in these multiplayer quests in your same log as your single player quests. It's really annoying.
Oh, Christ,
it's just a big cluttered mess. I did one just to see what it was like, and I ended up using a gun on that because it was designed for co-op and it didn't connect me with another player. So I just had to go in myself, and there was like guys with armor and stuff like that. So I did use some of the lethal weapons there, and it ended up being this huge long chase through the streets because the guy I was supposed to hack started running away, and I just chased him through like half of San Francisco, and eventually I shot him down and did what I had to do, but it wasn't very good. Let's just put it that way.
I've noticed if you have to chase somebody and you don't get them right away, you're in for like 30 to 40 minutes of chasing them around that damn map.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've yet to play it with somebody that I know. It does seem a little bit too random and haphazard when it's somebody that's just jumping into your game.
Yeah.
I don't know how much better it would flow if you do kind of know the person you're jumping in with.
At least if you had communication, like you're talking to them or something like that, you can coordinate a little bit better. But yeah, it didn't even connect me. It like said it was trying to, and then it did it for a couple minutes and then just threw me in myself, and it didn't go well. Let's just put it that way. I replayed it like three or four times because I kept getting shot and dying and stuff like that. It did kind of inspire me to explore all of my hacking options, though. Like you can remote control a car from your phone, and like
that thing's so useful.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you can like run people, like run dudes over with it and stuff like that. It's pretty cool. So that's kind of like where the playing it non-lethal kind of falls apart, is when you're driving around and then all of a sudden you accidentally wipe out an entire crosswalk full of people, and it's just like, well, maybe they just skin their knee. I don't know.
Possibly.
Yeah. So
still one thing, windshield. I don't think they're gonna be okay.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to talk about specifically was the driving in this game and how weird it feels. It's like it's like there's no weight to the cars at all, in my opinion. It's like it's extremely arcadey feeling, like all the cars like turn on a dime and they accelerate at an incredible rate. And it felt really weird at first when I started playing it. It feels way different than any other driving in any other type of game like this that I've played anyway. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah. Bikes even more so.
Yeah.
Bikes are very light and floaty.
Yeah. It's strange you're in San Francisco, but it feels like the road's covered in ice all the time.
Yep.
Yeah, that was weird, and I guess it's fine. It ended up being okay because it actually makes the driving a little bit easier when you're in a chase or something like that, because you don't have to worry about, like, if you're in a piece of shit car, you're not going to be able to outrun whatever you're outrunning. And I think the game does a pretty good job of letting you evade the cops and anybody that's chasing you a lot better than some of, like, I've always had But with Grand Theft Auto 4 and 5 specifically, I've always hated getting into chases with police because it's such a pain in the ass to outrun them and then lose your wanted level. When in the previous games, like 3 through San Andreas, you just dip into a pain spray and you'd be good to go. But it was always, it's more of a hassle in 4 and 5. But this seems to be like, as long as you outrun the cops and then go and hide in your car, you're pretty good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The last couple of missions I had to outrun the cops, and it was a pain in the ass. It just seemed like as soon as you got out of the way and it turned yellow, all of a sudden there was like another one there. I was like, how are you choosing where the hell they're coming from? Like,
yeah, that's always how it felt in Grand Theft Auto. It was like they would always put a car right there in front of you, a cop right there in front of you. And I don't know, I just haven't found that to be as big of an issue here yet. Maybe as it goes along, it'll get more frustrating. One thing I did want to bring up is the little map down in your corner, and it's pretty useful, especially when you're trying to evade the cops, but it's incredibly annoying every time you unlock a song and it covers up your entire screen for like 5 seconds. And you're like in the middle of this chase and you're like, oh, I gotta make sure I take the right turn, and then all of a sudden, song unlocked, pink screen covers up the whole thing. You're like, what the fuck? Like, I understand like them trying to create an aesthetic and like make it seem like a real thing, but man, is that annoying. And it happens a lot too.
I don't really enjoy the phone system, the way it's laid out. That can be a bit of a cluttered mess.
Like the menu?
When you select missions within the phone menus and stuff like that. And
yeah.
There's just like a list of stuff to select.
There's like 10 buttons on that phone and I know what 3 of them are. 3 or 4 of them.
I
use the map, I use the mission log, I use the XP thing, and then I use the settings, and that's it. There's like there's like a whole nother row of stuff that I don't even know what the hell it is. So how's the what have you been playing on? I've been playing on PC. What versions have you been playing?
I'm playing Xbox. And I'm playing on a PlayStation 4 Pro.
Okay, Lee, you're playing on the Xbox One,
Xbox One X. Yeah, the S.
Okay.
Yeah.
How's the performance for you guys been?
It's not really anything spectacular. It's the occasional chug. It's the occasional kind of glitch out. Ridiculous pop-ins, but that's about it, really. There's not much that really stands out, I would say. But yeah, it's fine. It's literally fine, and that's the best way you can say about it. The best thing you can say about it, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Nothing to annoy you too much.
Yeah, I haven't noticed anything real bad, but it performs pretty well. Nothing that really stands out, but pretty much what you would expect from that type of game.
Okay, and it looks good too. Looks at least somewhat. I mean, it's a 3-year-old game now, so.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Runs perfectly fine. How's the PC version?
The PC version's kind of interesting. Turns out that this game is, like, incredibly CPU intensive. Like, it is, like, There's a area of PC games where they started to really start to take advantage of like multi-core processors on PC, and this one seems to be one of those ones that they started to get there, but then they didn't quite have the optimizations in place to make it play well across a large range of different types of hardware. So when I first fired it up, I was getting like really bad frame rates. And, you know, I had just gotten a new graphics card. So I'm like, man, this is like a 3-year-old game and I'm playing it on this brand new graphics card and it's not running great. Like what's going on? Ooh. So I looked into it and, you know, my CPU was getting hit 100% almost all the time. And looking online and stuff like that, I found some things where, you know, at the time when this game came out, it was kind of something that a lot of people had problems with. So there's a lot of like, here's the best things that you can do to improve PC performance and stuff like that. So I tried some of that stuff and I ended up having to lock it at 30 frames per second in order to get a stable frame rate, which is not really ideal for when you play on PC. You want to get you want to try to at least hit 60 frames per second. But I had to, otherwise it was just fluctuating so much that it was like, you know, it was like the thing that we were talking about with Sekiro on console, where the frame rate wasn't matching the refresh rate. So there was like stutter and it was like extremely noticeable when it dropped down, especially in like huge populated areas of the city and stuff like that. So from that perspective, the performance wasn't really that great for me. But on the other hand, when I capped it at 30, I had tons of room to turn up all of the bells and whistles. So like I made it look really good, even though it was capped at 30 frames per second. So on PC you could make this game look really, really good. With all the like different detail options like reflections and lighting and things like that, and anti-aliasing and stuff like that to make get rid of all the jaggies on the cars and stuff like that. I mean it can look really good. You just need a really crazy PC in order to like have it at the frame rates you're probably looking for. The other thing cool about the PC version is this has something called NVIDIA Ansel. That's A-N-S-E-L, which is graphics card built in almost like photo mode. So at any point in the game, I can activate this and it pauses the game, freezes it at its current spot, and I can kind of move the camera around wherever I want in the scene and add all of these effects onto it. Like I posted some to the Voxel Voice group. Like you can add a green screen behind your character. So like it kind of like analyzes the scene and is like, okay, here's the main character, takes out all the background, and then you can put whatever you want behind you, which was dumb, but what cool. But it just gives you way more options to deal with like focus, depth of field, field of view, zooming in and stuff like that, that if the game doesn't have that built into its photo mode already, this kind of just gives it to you without it having to be officially in the game. It was the first time I had experienced it, and it's pretty cool.
Oh. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Other than that, I think this is a pretty solid game all around. It's got some some pacing issues and a little bit of, you know, like we talked about, some AI problems in terms of like giving you so many options to approach something, the AI can't quite keep up with it. But overall, it's certainly a good follow-up, a solid follow-up to a game that kind of was okay, but it wasn't really everything that it probably could have ended up being. Which kind of gets me excited for the rumors around Watch Dogs 3, taking place in Lee's backyard, as it were.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Londinium.
Yep. Looks like it's going to take place, hopefully, in London, which I'm excited for, too, because I get super bored with, you know, here's another one set in New York City, another open world driving game, or, you know, wherever it may be. So getting it out of the United States and in another completely different setting has me excited too.
Yeah, doesn't happen often coming to London. I think the last time there was a open world kind of third person action game like that was probably the Getaway games, which is a good few gen old now. So it's not a scenario you see often.
No. Yeah, I remember. I remember playing one at some point. I don't remember. Was there was one of the true crimes in London?
No. One was in LA, and one was in New York. The second one was in New York.
All right, I guess I'm thinking of some other game. The third one was basically
Sleeping Dogs. Yeah.
I'm not sure what it was. I hope that ends up being true. Seems like it probably is, and we'll probably see it at E3 in a couple months here.
Indeed.
Yeah. All right. Does anybody have anything else they want to say about Watch Dogs before we wrap it up?
Not really. I mean, I would imagine it's not an expensive game now. No. I would imagine it's fairly cheap to pick up now, and I would say kind of it's definitely worth it for the price that you would find it at, as long as it's not over what it was originally, obviously. But it's definitely worth a look if you skipped it first time, I would say.
Derek, you went and picked up another copy, right, to play?
Yeah, I think it was like $15 at GameStop.
Oh, okay. That's a steal, 15. Yeah, that's easily a 15 value. Yeah.
But I think digitally on the store, it was still pretty expensive.
Yeah, digitally on the main storefronts, even on PC, it's still at like $60.
Oh dear lord!
Yeah, but like at least on PC, you can definitely get it cheaper on like a third party site or something like that. You could probably get a physical copy, a quote unquote physical copy, for PC on Amazon for a good deal too. Even though it's just a code that you punch in to Uplay and download it anyway. Spent a whole lot of Uplay points on stupid cosmetic stuff in the game. So, because I needed to use up a ton of those before April something or other, April 1st, I think it was.
Utterly needless stuff. I saw the Uplay stuff on there. Well, thanks.
Oh yeah, it's useless. There's been a couple times where I've gotten some good stuff, like actual DLC missions and stuff like that. But for the most part, it's really just a bunch of cosmetic crap that, you know, if you want to play as Sergeant Johnson in the Division, you know, that famous character, you can go spend your Uplay points on that and play as Sergeant Johnson in the Division. I didn't even know there were characters in the First Division.
No. There are, but there aren't.
Right. I guess I didn't spend the Uplay points to unlock the characters. Alright, well, that's gonna wrap up Watch Dogs. Is there anything that we're looking forward to coming out in the next few weeks here? Seems like a pretty quiet.
Days Gone is coming up.
When is that coming out? That's at the end of the month, right?
Yes. The 20s. Let me look.
Eventually, I think is the straight date for that.
Yeah.
April 26th. So.
As somebody I know called it State of Delay. Which made me laugh.
MK11 is coming out the 23rd. Is anybody picking that up?
I'm actually looking forward to World War Z, or Z. I'll say Z, but we'll see. Is apparently a dark horse. Because people are like, I'm not sure, because obviously it's a kind of a licensed game, but apparently it's like better than people have expected it to be.
Yeah, I saw some coverage on that, and it actually looked pretty decent.
Yeah. And like, it's actually kind of better than expectations. So I want to look at that. That's next week, I believe. End of next week.
Yeah, that's coming out the 16th.
And it's relatively cheap, I think. It sells for like £35 here, which is probably about $40 there.
I think, I don't know if this got moved. I remember it got delayed. And I don't know if this is the new date or not, but Anno 1800 is coming out, which is like a strategy, like, I guess it's kind of like a village builder kind of game. It's not like a real-time strategy where you're building armies or anything like that. It's more about trade and building up an empire. If that comes out and it's decent, I may take a look at that, because I've liked games in that series before.
Oh.
Dragon's Dogma is coming to Switch on the 23rd.
Yeah, I saw that.
Nice.
So, please. Now that we wrapped up Watch Dogs, what do we think we want to throw out, and any ideas for another replay?
Let's have a look.
You know, Borderlands just captured a lot of people's attention. And then we've got Rage 2 coming out mid-May. I don't know if we want to revisit the first game.
Now, I've been dipping into the pre-sequel, actually. And I never liked it. I gave up very early on it. And it's actually more interesting than you expect it to be once you actually get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't think it would be. Once you start hitting like your level 15, level 20, it gets a lot more interesting than it does when it starts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've actually started playing through from since the first Borderlands came out. We're going to play through in order. We're going to play Borderlands pre-sequel, Borderlands 2. And then, because I never played it, I'm going to play through the Telltale series, because eventually that will lead into 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tried the pre-sequel a couple of times, and I didn't like the constant oxygen issue.
Yeah.
And I didn't like the floatiness of the gravity. Actually gave me like motion sickness to a certain extent. So it was kind of a two on two fronts. It kind of pushed me off of it. But when they announced the remaster of the first game, they also went back and added some graphic updates too. The Handsome Collection, so I may give it one more try, as it were. But yeah, I've been playing through the remaster of the first game, and it's pretty good. They did a good job. I know Derek's been having some issues, and so was Lee, but different kinds of issues.
I'm not playing it for a while.
Yeah.
No. Impossible to get hold of unless you buy it digitally, and I don't buy digital. They have a very strange release plan for it.
Yeah.
I think it's limited stocks in GameStop as well, which is an exclusive.
Right.
They've
got
ridiculously low numbers. Odd.
Yeah, it didn't seem like I don't think that they were looking to make a lot of money off the physical version. Or they weren't looking to spend a lot of money on the physical version anyway.
Yeah,
I heard like each store only got like 5 copies to sell outside of like pre-orders. Like I went to grab 2 copies and they're like, we have none. They called me back the next day and there was like 1 available. So we ended up just grabbing it digital.
Wow.
Yeah. Madness.
But yeah, Derek, you said you're having trouble with the PS4 Pro version.
Yeah, so the issue I'm having is I'm playing it in the 4K with the HDR on and all that, and I am getting some crazy screen tear. Like, if I've got to jump or move around, I can just, like, watch the whole screen move.
Wow.
And it's pretty bad at times. I'm going to go back to test it, because like you said, you were having any problems in 1080, so maybe if I drop down my resolution to that,
Yeah, and, maybe.
See if that stabilizes it out.
Yeah, I was.
But
I was
other than that, it's
yeah,
it's been pretty good. A lot harder than I remember it, but.
Oh yeah, I'm actually kind of cruising through it. I'm using the weapons that that came with it, like the fancy gearbox weapons and stuff like that, kind of made a lot of the early parts of the game kind of trivial.
Yeah, see, I've been playing with a group of at least two other people, because that's who I'm kind of running through the whole thing with, and I get my ass kicked. Like, I'm kind of getting like the short end of the stick on the loot and stuff like that. So,
yeah, I played with another person too, and then again didn't really have too much of a problem. And I'm playing on Xbox One X and 1080p, and it looks and plays really well. There was a little bit of lagginess you could tell when I was playing with another person, but it wasn't anything too significant. All right, so if no one has anything else they wanna throw in, I guess we'll call it a night.
Pretty much.
I don't think so.
All right.
Everything's cool here.
So if you want to follow us, you can check out the Voxel Voice Facebook group and page. You can obviously subscribe on YouTube if you're watching this, and we're also on iTunes and Google Play. So if you like listening to podcasts on the go or at home or wherever you listen to podcasts, you can subscribe to us there. And if you give us a review, that gives us a boost in where we show up in the game section. So if you like it, give us a review, and maybe we'll get more followers, and we'll level up and be able to unlock more abilities. Hack the world. All right, guys, thanks for hanging out, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Peace.